Hi, I'm Nathan Matten. Welcome to Resync. I talk to guests about the relationship between their individual search for meaning and the systemic change they've created. I ask them to open up and be vulnerable, sharing personal moments that have led to massive transformations in how they think about and work in the world.
So I'm with Amanda Winther today. She's the co-founder of The Van Project, a former YouTube PMM, product marketing manager, and also a lifetime adventurer.
Hi.
Hey, Amanda. Good to chat with you.
Great to chat with you, too.
So tell me a little bit about what's exciting to you right now. What's going on in your life?
It's a big question. It changes with the seasons a little bit, but I'm still very excited about adventuring outside. Obviously, if it's called the Van Project, I am interested in things around dwelling in tiny spaces and vans. And I'm also just a lifelong learner right now. That's what I'm hoping to be forever. But at least right now, I'm very passionate about that too.
Great. And so you've been on the road for almost 2 years now living out of van. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we've had the van for about 2 years and we've been on the road for about a year and a half. Okay. We spent 6 months building it out or rebuilding it. It was fine inside, but it just needed some updates to make it perfect for us.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And for a living, you kind of make some money from the Van Project. Then you guys also have side gigs that you'll do on the road. And so you can have this entirely traveling lifestyle. Is that right?
That's mostly right. Yeah. So we do most of our work online and remotely. I still do some marketing and copywriting work that transfers skills from my previous life at YouTube. And then I also have picked up some jobs sometimes in person, which is kind of fun because it gives you a little more of a connection to a place. So sometimes we'll pick up event work along the way. And then we do make a small amount of money from the Van Project itself, but that's not a huge percentage of our total earnings.
Well, I wanted to give people a little context on what you're up to now, but then I really wanted to go back in time, in the time machine, if you will. I wanted to ask about when you were growing up, tell me a little bit about where you grew up and also what you thought you wanted to be when you were a kid.
Yeah. So I grew up in Westport, Connecticut. It's a suburb of Connecticut. And for a long time when I was younger, I don't know if it started when I was really a kid, but when I was younger for a long, long time, I thought I was going to be a lawyer.
Mm. It sounds like what you're doing basically, right?
Pretty much the same, right? Living in a van or a corporate law in New York City.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same. Yes. And well, I did kind of try to pursue that path for a while. I went to Dartmouth. I went to an Ivy League college and I took the LSAT. Then I taught the LSAT for a little while and I applied to law school and got in. But I didn't get into my first choice. So that was part of it. And it's a blessing in disguise. Now I look back and if I had, I'd probably have gone. But I kept deferring law school and ultimately decided after I deferred it twice. So after my second one, I decided that was not for me. I talked to a lot of people who were in law school at the time. This would have been around 2009 or 10. And I think the situation might be a little better now, but it was really desperate then. Like so many people were just going to law school because they didn't feel there was anything else to do. And the career outlook was very bleak as far as people even being able to get roles as lawyers to pay back their loans. And I ultimately decided I spoke to this law professor, which was one of the things I thought I wanted to do. I thought maybe I want to be a law professor, but I spoke to him and he said, you know, if you think of something that you can do, a law degree is not required for at least 90% of the things you could see yourself doing in your future, think really hard about it. And so I did. And, I'm very glad I have chosen a different path.
What made you want to be a lawyer when you first had that idea?
I'm not sure. Probably partially seeds planted by like my family, my mom, who has a deep respect for lawyers for some reason. She's a doctor. So I think just higher education is something that she very much values. I think that's one part of it. And I think it, I also really like theory and studying laws and thinking about deep questions like that. I studied government, but political theory government in college. And so I think that might be probably the bigger side of it that's a little more relevant to me, is that I do appreciate thinking about big ideas, like what is freedom and what should our systems look like and what should the laws look like and how does that affect how a culture is? Those kinds of deeper questions do interest me, but I don't know. That's not law in the way that it's practiced.
Yeah, that sounds like definitely philosophy and policy and some, you know, definitely parts of law have those elements in them. What about those questions are interesting to you? Why do you like those questions?
I mean, I think that those types of questions like bring me in touch with our history as humans, but also kind of our current human behavior and can inform both sides of that coin of where we were as humans like a long time ago and how things became how they are today. So a lot of people have different lenses for thinking about human action and human behavior. I'd say that's the one that I was most drawn to was philosophy. I know people who studied economics and I think that's very interesting, but I didn't spend as many hours studying economics as I did philosophy. For me, it was more fun to kind of think about what does freedom mean or what should it mean? How can you have a multicultural system? Like in the US, we have our democracy, but like we have pockets of liberal and illiberal communities living here. And how do they deal with each other? And what does that look like? And how do you deal with conflict? And how can you be a greater liberal government or group or community and deal with illiberal pockets in there too? So those types of questions I was really drawn to. It's kind of like deeper ways of talking about how we get along as humans or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. How do we work as a society and how could we or should we work in your, as you learn about it? That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there, yeah. How did you end up at YouTube? That's even one more pretty interesting twist.
Yeah, it was. So I was at that time, I was living in the DC area and working at a nonprofit. And I knew the nonprofit world for me was a little bit, it wasn't right at the time. I'm not saying it couldn't ever be. And there are probably nonprofits that are not like this, but I definitely experienced very much a bureaucratic nonprofit. Slow moving, averse to change. And just people who had been around for a long time who didn't necessarily feel passionate about their fields and just wanted something that felt like it was making a bigger impact. And I always have had a respect for startups and technology as a way to do that. And so that is one reason I looked towards San Francisco and Silicon Valley. And that I have a friend who still works at Google and was working at YouTube at the time. And I was very close to leaving, to like quitting my job and just driving out to San Francisco. I was going to stop along the way and do some rock climbing and have like a solo road trip across the country. And he heard about it and he said, "We really need someone to help at YouTube with our email marketing. What do you think? Like, I know you're really smart and you'll figure it out." And I had I had a small background in email marketing, very, very, I'd say 2% of what I did in my previous nonprofit was email marketing. I was running very, very small percentage.
But precise.
and I thought about it for a little while. It was very scary and it was a much faster timeline than I had wanted as far as it's like this road trip will be about a month and a half. And he's like, "We need you there and 2 weeks," and I pushed it back to 3. And so I said yes to that, and it brought me out to San Francisco, which I am so happy about. I love San Francisco for a lot of reasons. And it brought me to the Bay, where I very much changed my life and a new direction and in tech at YouTube. from this nonprofit.
And so then from YouTube, when did you know you were going to leave and start this nomadic life? I'm very curious about the circumstances around that.
It took me a little while. Like the role and the team were probably not a great fit for me from the beginning, which is something I should have paid attention to more. And that's something I've learned as far as working careers that will, I ended up there for about 3 years, which is not too long. It's not. But it was long enough that if you kind of have this feeling it's not for you early on, that feels like a long time to hang on.
Yeah, definitely. And so you were saying you should have paid more attention?
I should have paid more attention to my inner voice telling me there was something a little bit off, whether I don't know specifically what it was. I think the team at that time, I mean, email marketing was very underappreciated at YouTube. It probably still is. It's not a platform that's about emails. It's a platform that's about videos and fun, awesome social interactions and personalities. Like YouTube feels, email felt very static for what YouTube was trying to do at that time in marketing, even though email is a very effective platform for a lot of things as far as marketing goes. And so, I don't know, a lot of factors around that. It was actually a very hard transition for me. Like everything at once was really hard, and I was pretty unhappy at first. And then I found my groove. I got a lot better at all those systems. I was very good at using the internal tools that we had there, which were something I had to completely learn from scratch because they only exist at Google. And you know, I still was like, it was 100% a great place to learn and to accelerate my learning from my previous life in a nonprofit. I would have learned a lot slower. It wouldn't have been impossible, but I would have learned a lot more slowly how to do a lot of systems in the marketing world. And I was surrounded by people who were really passionate about it, very knowledgeable, and resources galore as far as being able to learn that kind of skill and mindset.
You started to see the end in sight, and then when was the moment you decided it's time to try something different? And did you have this nomadic life in mind then?
So I think one of the things that you'll probably know working in tech is that, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people are responsible for getting people or capturing people's attention. Or so like my job more specifically was getting people to watch more YouTube, to click on my emails and get them to watch more YouTube and increase overall watch time of YouTube. And that's a great thing for YouTube because that's how YouTube and Google would make money. And there was one other little side project of mine, which was getting people, some countries, people don't know about YouTube as much. So some of those were just spreading awareness too. But I kind of had this realization, and I don't know, I think that there's some indications that like tech is maybe understanding that this is not the right way to talk about it. But it felt like when I was there that we were just trying to increase watch time or user behavior activity, like with no logical end, I guess is how
right.
I put it.
It didn't fit into a larger picture or have intentionality behind it.
Right. It was like, well, we just want to increase it. And I had these moments where I'm like, but what if people are watching YouTube for like 20 hours a day? Is that good for them? Is that good for humanity? And like, once I started thinking about that, it got really hard to buy into my specific role at the company. So that was one of the things that made me start questioning what I was doing specifically. So that makes me a little bit less, I don't know, more hopeful. But once I saw it when I was working there, that was kind of like the thing that made me question what I was doing. And once I started questioning kind of the point of my job, like it was pretty hard to stay there too much longer. And so that next year, the engineering team was in LA. And so I would travel there, and that's where Matt lived. And we hung out another time. And I think some of the conversations with him made me think more deeply, because I remember when I went to LA one time, I went for a hike with him and my brother and his girlfriend too, because my brother also lives in LA. And he was kind of just, I remember talking to him, and he reminds me, like, I was already at that point talking to him about wanting to try something different and leave and like travel or go explore in nature or hike or something like that. And he's like, why don't you just do it? Kind of mm-hmm. what's stopping you? And so, you know, I had to have a lot of those conversations before I ultimately made the leap. And the truth of the matter is, at the end, like, I was pretty much ready to do that. And I ended up getting laid off, which was a blessing in disguise. It was amazing. I needed that great. In some ways. Yeah. I think it would have taken me a little longer, probably a couple months at least longer, to finally cut that Google YouTube cord, because I did learn a lot. It's like, there are so many great things to say about it, but I also was definitely not learning and thriving in the way that I needed to be.
So I'm going to read you a quote. This is from Matt on your blog. My feet are resting at the end of the couch that's closest to the door, and for a good reason. That's the end that smells like cat piss. Honestly, I'm not surprised. This couch was picked up off the street. It's still a perfectly functional couch, one that I've spent many hours reclined on, writing emails, crafting new versions of the same resume, and generally pondering my life in San Francisco. And so this was part of a blog that he wrote at the beginning, or it's the first entry in the Van Project website when you guys, you know, eventually mm-hmm. are now living in this van. And so again, I hear these ideas of doing something different. And I hear when you talk about the creativity, when you talk about, you know, kind of what's good for society and what's normal and not. And I'm just curious what that theme means to you in life.
In a lot of ways, to me, it felt like, one thing I've said is that moving into the van, like, was a progression that felt natural to me. It didn't feel out of the norm. And that's really weird to say, because I know it is out of the norm. I am bombarded with that fact all the time. There are not systems created in, especially cities, but like, there are not really systems created in a lot of places to accommodate people living in vehicles in the way that like this trend is developing. So there's a lot of fight back against it, and for good reason in some part, and like maybe not good reason in another. But it didn't feel, I guess I'll say, is it doesn't feel like I'm necessarily taking a stand against the norm. It feels like I'm doing something that follows what I have to be doing for myself, and not in a selfish way, or maybe it is, but in a way that is like, I need to nurture myself before I can put on your oxygen mask, before you can put on other people's. And so to me, that's what it felt like. Even if it, like, I hear people, and you're not the first person who's told me that it's inspiring, or that it's like something that is very against the norm. And, but that's not what I'm doing in my mind. I'm just doing what I feel I need to do for myself. And like, the truth of the matter was, I was very, from my job in Silicon Valley, I was very burnt out for many reasons, but I was very burnt out, and I needed a break, a huge break. And so inevitably, like, choosing something that's the most extreme, I guess, makes sense in some ways too. Like, go travel without a return, like buy a one-way flight and go travel in South America for an unknown amount of time. It ended up being 3.5 months, but it was like, at that point in my mind, I didn't know how long it was going to be. And I had never done anything like that in my life. And so, like, I think also once I did that, like, once I started these small steps towards things that felt really scary and extreme, it felt easier to mm-hmm. take more of those.
Why is that?
I think it's the same way you have a comfort zone in general, and just like slightly pushing in any sphere of your comfort zone. So it's the same. I can draw analogies to going outside, and the first time you go hiking, and a 5-mile hike feels really hard and really scary if you're by yourself, or even if you're not, like, being outside and being in a quiet place away from cities, away from noise, away from people might be very scary at first, but the more you do that, the more comfortable you get with it. and your experiences inform future experiences. So I think in general, just as humans, that's something that we can build, like a muscle that we can build. Our comfort zone can be expanded. And so I think like I definitely have maybe expanded my comfort zone beyond what a lot of people have too. I don't know. That's possible. Yeah.
And this notion of kind of steps and muscle building, I'm curious how that relates to this burnout you're bringing up. Do you feel like, is burnout another muscle that, like, the sign of another muscle that's not being used, or are those just completely different in your mind?
I'm not sure. I think for me, burnout was more just not listening to what my body needed for a long time. So it could be more of, if you think of it as that analogy, it'd be more of an atrophy of something not being used. And eventually at some point it breaks and it needs to be healed. And that's how I think of it too.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, in some ways it seems like there is some way to connect those two things together of like, there is this path or this kind of natural direction you can go in if you're listening. And if you are listening, then you're just building that muscle to listen better. And if you're not, then it's atrophying. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what I'm thinking about. I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
Yeah, that does. And the other thing that I kind of think about now when I have this perspective to look back is that, and one of the things I've become more conscious about in my life is that the world will take you on a path. It's like you're going downstream, and you can either be taken down that path or that stream, or you can decide which way to go. You can like paddle your own boat on the stream. And I think for a lot of my life, in many ways, I was being taken down the stream, and I've now been a lot more intentional about paddling my boat, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. When did it switch?
It was sometime in San Francisco, sometime around this realization, disconnecting myself. So leaving a place that so many people see as a pinnacle of a career. So like that actually, I think had to be part of my story. Leaving YouTube, which is like, it is an amazing place to work, but it also is in society just seen as such the high point or the pinnacle. It's like, once you reach that, I think you'll see if that's not actually the pinnacle for you, you'll quickly see like, oh, wait a second. What else is out there? Or like, what was I doing? And why did I think that this was it? And it allowed me to question myself much more deeply, my intentions, my motivations and everything.
Maybe that's what I mean by normal is not normal, but what society thinks is true versus what is your experience. So for example, I used to work at a company called IDEO, and the founder, David Kelly, used to work at Boeing. And he said, this was the dream industrial design job. Everybody thought I should be happy and everyone at that company was happy. But internally, we were all miserable with the bureaucracy. And so I just started working with friends. And so I think that's maybe not normal as much as what society thinks versus your experience. Does that sound like more resonant with you?
Yeah, that definitely resonates with me. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people have this experience, but maybe it just takes time to accept it as real. Like for me, that was part of it. I would tell people I was thinking about leaving YouTube, and the first response would be why, which is a fine response, but they also, you know, like weren't just curious about why I was wanting to leave. Like they were doubting my feelings about wanting to leave or something. It was like both of these, like, no, you can't want to leave. That's just like, that's the best. Like you have everything you could ever have in your life.
Right. So people call sometimes Google like the best job you could possibly have in corporate America, whether or not it's true. And I'm sure it varies from role to role, but that sort of can be the common perception, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure it varies. Like I always say this, it varies from team to person to role. Like there are plenty of people who would have been very, very happy in the role that I had. And I probably could find roles there that I would be happy in at some point too. So it's a big company and there's so much variety. But where I was definitely led me to an extreme switch in the other direction.
It's so interesting too, because this idea of kind of self-authoring, it doesn't require you to leave. It requires you to change your mindset. Do you know what I mean? Like you could, I think lots of people have really awesome lives in these jobs and they don't feel like they're just doing other people's stuff. They have just found a way to self-author that. I don't know if that is something that you've thought about at all, but it's just coming.
I have. And I look back and I think about, so I think if there's certain roles, even at YouTube that weren't that far away that I could have, like my narrative for doing that work would have been more rewarding in some ways. Like I would have been able to say, I'm actually, it's like YouTube is a platform that people make a living out of by, like they can actually create videos and content that they want to create and make a living.
Right. You're trying that's to do amazing. That now, right? It's real.
Yeah. Like it's a real thing and that's amazing. And like YouTube does in a lot of ways facilitate that. And it was one of the first platforms to allow that as far as, especially the, I mean, in the video world. So there's a lot of amazing things. And I think if I had worked more on that partner marketing side where you're working with channels and helping them be successful, that maybe I wouldn't have had this experience. Maybe I wouldn't have had this shift. Maybe I would have, but I think that there's certainly narratives where every company or every corporation entity has places that I could probably like fit my narrative in better and fit my narrative in worse. And it's been interesting kind of to look back on and see that. There was a point where it got too far. I was just like too burnt out and sullied and negative on YouTube and Google in general. Like, unfortunately, it just happened. But I do think, like, when I've looked back on it, that there are places that I could have been there and probably been very happy as far as my authoring, my how my career fits right into my meaning in the world.
That's one of the big questions in tech. And if we have time, let's come back to that. I do want to hear a little bit about the van, the van life. So what I'm really interested in is you've been in the van now for a year and a half. You guys have been doing amazing trips, adventures to Utah, John Muir Trail, helping people figure out how to pimp out their vans. where does this go? Do you have a sense? Is it still feeding this, you know, kind of restoration need that you have, or is there another place you're really hoping this can go in the next few years?
So when I started it, I didn't have any end goal in mind. And I think that might be different than some people who start something with like, I'm going to do this for, or a lot of people I meet, I'm traveling in a van for a year. My goal is to see all of the national parks, all 59 national parks. And that's, you know, that's a very clear goal. There's a clear end point. There's a clear starting point. And in some ways, like that'd be great to have, but I didn't have that and I don't have that. And so one of the things that Matt and I say is like, we do check back in with each other often about kind of if we're still happy to be living nomadically or not. And one of the things we've talked about is trying to maybe find a bit more of a base camp sometime this year or early next year. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we will be moving back to a city or back into a permanent residence, but having a place where we'll want to have a little less movement in our life to allow ourselves to focus on other things, like some of our creative endeavors, some of our creative endeavors or other aspects rather than just like the movement, the physical movement to different.
And so what does the movement give you? And then what is this thing you're thinking about now of more stillness and base campy stuff give you?
Movement, I think the movement gives inspiration and freedom, both of those things. So being able to choose where I wake up the next day, like I could take off and have my home in the desert and wake up in Joshua Tree tomorrow if I wanted. And being able to do that and actually not have anything saying I can't, that was a big reason why I was interested in this lifestyle. At the same time, like movement and not having a place, any sort of base, like I don't have a base at all. I don't have a home base. I don't have a place to go back to. And that's that in its own way is tiring. Not having a place that has, that you don't have to worry about moving in 2 weeks. It's like, you know, I can go to BLM land and set up for 2 weeks, which is actually pretty amazing that we have that in this country. But 2 weeks goes by quickly, and then I have to think about moving somewhere else theoretically and moving my roots. And I think both of those things are nice to have in your life at some point, but we probably need a little bit more. We need to dig some slightly deeper roots. It could just be having a driveway to hang out in for a month instead of 2 weeks, for example.
Yeah, that's really, I can relate to that. The other question I wanted to ask before we finish is a bit about the financial side, because I'm curious, it's easy to talk about living your dreams and paddling your own boat, some of the metaphors we've used. And it's challenging to do that if you feel like you're financially constrained, whether you are or aren't. And so I'm curious how, you know, your time at YouTube, and I'm assuming earning a decent wage there, helped you versus before, maybe when you had had some of those ideas, if that was at all an idea in your head earlier in your life.
I mean, absolutely. You can't do anything for free. Like, you need to pay for food, you need to pay for gas. I think some people get the idea that it's also all work, or sorry, all play and no work. In order to do this on a longer term scale, you have to figure out a way to make it sustainable, to make income while you're doing it. And whether that, however that is, it's very different. Like, people make income doing seasonal work, people make income doing remote, computer coding or computer science jobs. Like, I meet people all the time doing pretty much the same thing that they would do in Silicon Valley on the road. And I think it comes down to your motivations and reasons for doing it too at some point. So for us, a big point was, like I said, I was burnt out and I needed to take a step back. So one of the benefits is that the cost of living in a van compared to Silicon Valley is much less. You don't have to pay for a San Francisco apartment. Your baseline that you need to cover, your overhead, is much less. So that's one of the things that we definitely both take advantage of. Like, we do not need to pay as much money to have food and gas and have a place to stay. At the same time, I personally would not want to be working as many hours as I was when I was at YouTube in the van. Like, some people do that. Some people work 60 hours a week, 70 hours a week in the van. And like, to me, that is, if I were starting to do that, I think I would need more space. Like, it just inevitably being in that amount of space, and if you need to work that much, you're probably not going to be able to do it all outside. You'd need some sort of place inside to do it too. Probably that would mean that we would need to get a place. And so I think you kind of have to check in with your, again, your reasoning for doing it. And like, for us, it was about being able to enjoy exploration and passions and learning and rock climbing and learning these outdoor endeavors, these hobbies, like taking these hobbies that gave me life while I was working at YouTube, taking them and actually doing them more intensely for a while. But that said, it's definitely not a forever. Like, for us, I don't think, like, some people would say they move into a van, they're like, I'm doing this forever. And I don't think that's the case for us. I think there's another side of it, which is that we are using it as a vehicle, which is literal and figurative, to explore other places that we could live to. I don't think I can come back to San Francisco, like, at least not right now. I come back and visit friends, and it's amazing to see my friends, and I love that. But the pace of life and everything is not what I need right now, if ever. And that's something I've had to come to accept. So I think part of it is also about finding places and exploring places more deeply than I would be able to with other modes of travel in some ways. Like, I could travel around in backpack and like live in a hostel, but I have my home with me and I can go experience new towns or cities more deeply.
We're definitely getting close on time here.
Yeah.
I guess I want to ask you, as we close up here, is there any final thoughts or reflections you have from this conversation you'd want people listening to this to know?
Oh my gosh.
If not, it's okay. It's just a thought.
I mean, I think people sometimes ask us like how they can do what we're doing. And first off, I think that they shouldn't be doing what we're doing. They should do what they need for them. So like, that's my first thing I would say as far as advice. And secondly, I would say that if it's something you want to do, then you can do it. It doesn't mean you can do it tomorrow, but it means if there's something you want to do, like take steps towards it. I think the way that we got into things was probably faster and more extreme in some ways. That is partially my personality and partially just my circumstance. But I feel it's been the best thing for me and that I've done in my life as far as like healing myself, allowing myself to pursue things that I'm passionate about and kind of tapping back into my creativity. Those are all things that I had lost. And I think these decisions that I've made in the last 2 years have allowed me to do that much more deeply than I would have if I had stayed on my old path.
That's wonderful. And where can people find you if they want to learn more about what you're up to?
They can find us. Our website is thevanproject.com. And then we have Instagram's probably the best place if you want to send us a message or anything. Although we do respond to messages from the site, but Instagram is @van.project. And then we have a YouTube, which we are actively building. That was my boyfriend's choice more than mine. I don't love being on camera, but that is at the van. It is the van project. So youtube.com/thevanproject.
Well, thanks, Amanda. It's wonderful to hear about your kind of quest. It reminds me of Odysseus looking for a home and searching for meaning. And it's great to hear kind of how it all connects back to those interests and big ideas and the cool adventures along the way.
Thanks so much for listening. As always, feel free to share some feedback, and I look forward to seeing you on the next show.